You know when you get to a new place and right away you feel that there's something special about it, but you can't quite put your finger on what it is? That's exactly how I felt first time I visited the Driftless region.
To the yellow.
Perfect.
All right, there's the camera.
Yeah.
And here's your safety.
This is me. My name is Jonas Stenström and I'm from Sweden. But right now I'm hanging on the edge of a cliff by the Mississippi River in southern Minnesota. Why? Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. This here is my best friend and business partner, Rob Nelson.
You gotta figure out which way deeper water is.
We're both biologists and filmmakers, and together we travel all over to find and document interesting wildlife stories. It started as a passion to document nature, and now we feel it's our mission to show our children that interesting nature stories can be found even in places you don't expect it. Where we are right now is one of those.
Here, get a close-up of this.
We are in the Driftless region, an area located by the Upper Mississippi River from southern Minnesota and Wisconsin to northern Iowa and a small section of northwestern Illinois. The reason this region is special is in its name, Driftless. Drift, or more specifically glacial drift, is a geological term for material transported and left behind by glaciers. At different times in history, much of the land has been covered by glacial ice, times we often refer to as glacial periods, or more commonly, the Ice Ages. During the last glacial period, which is believed to have ended about 11,000 years ago, the mile-thick pack of ice moved south from Canada and covered much of the northern part of the US. Its destructive force crushed everything in its way, and when the ice eventually disappeared, the land underneath was forever changed, literally leveled to the ground. Except here. Of all the known glacial periods, the area we today call the Driftless region never got covered by the ice. Somehow, this region got spared, and what was left behind was an environment filled with interesting stories, with great environmental and cultural importance. But why did all these glacial advances miss the Driftless region? This is unique on Earth. We're here to find some answers. Rob is really the one who told me I had to come and see this. He was here filming a few years ago, and the more the team started digging into it, the more they realized that this was a truly unique part of the world, and that most people had no idea about it.
The Driftless sound?
I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about.
The team left with too many unanswered questions, stories that seemed too interesting to stay undocumented. Rob called me up and said, "Hey Jonas, get the cameras ready, we have some places to visit."
Hey!
So here we are. But none of this would have been possible without our two local guides, George Howe and Tim Jacobson. As a biologist born and raised in the Driftless, George is like a walking book of stories about the region.
Countless fragments of marine organisms.
Life cycle of freshwater mussels.
And Tim, equally as filled with knowledge about the ins and outs of the Driftless, and always armed with the camera and ready if there's something to document.
It was freaky. It was really freaky.
Their passion for the Driftless is really the reason this story started in the first place.
So let's head up the bluff.
Right now, we're itching to start looking for some of the answers to the many questions we have, and what better place to start than from the sky? Lucky for us, Tim is also a pilot.
Testing 1, 2, 3, can you guys hear me?
Hear you, over.
I can hear you, over.
Great, 3 go, but 3-1, ready for takeoff.
Basically got the entire Mississippi River down here.
It's pretty amazing to see the Mississippi River from this perspective. The huge amount of water moving downstream and constantly reshaping the river valley in its way.
Wow, this is cool.
Massive floodplain forest to our right.
The water pushing sediment around, cutting through large floodplain forests and creating a network of little islands and winding canals everywhere in between. One exception is Lake Pepin, the largest lake and the widest natural section of the entire Mississippi River. Another interesting observation we made were small dots on the landscape, sinkholes that seemed to pepper the fields. But the most striking features of the area are without a doubt the steep bluffs lining the mighty Mississippi River. From the ground, they look like impressive hills with sections of vertical exposed rock that is layered in bands with different colors. But from the air, there's also something else about the bluffs that stands out.
The bluffs look totally different from here. They're all about the same height.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All the bluffs lining the river, as well as further inland, are the exact same height. Like the peaks have all been shaved down to the same level. But instead of just a flat plateau, the land is dissected by valleys between the bluffs, creating the striking topography that is characterizing the Driftless.
It's interesting to see it from up here because you can't see any lakes, but there is a lot of water. There's rivers and stream cutting across the landscape in the valleys between the bluffs. But the only large body of water is the Mississippi River.
And all the streams and rivers seem to also eventually link up with the Mississippi. What we are seeing are the results of the unique geomorphology that has shaped the Driftless region. How is a different question. But everything is linked. The streams, the bluffs, the Mississippi River. And to understand this, we must first look at how this land was formed in the first place. And the clues are in the bluffs.
So, one of the things that I talk about, with my students is what did this landscape look like at these various points in time? And one of the things I think is really neat about studying rocks, for instance, is that's how we know, right? That's where that information comes from about the natural history of the world that we live in.
Colin explains that the bluffs are made up of sedimentary rock that dates back to a time when all of this, and in fact the whole planet, looked a lot different.
When we look at the rocks that make up the bluffs, those rocks have clues within them that tell us that this would have been a tropical sea that we would have had here 500 to 450 million years ago, right? Which is crazy to think about when you look at this landscape that we see today and we're in the mid-latitudes in the northern hemisphere.
Let's stop here for a minute and take this in. We are now about 1,000 miles from the Atlantic coast to the east and more than 1,700 miles from the Pacific coast to the west. And all of this was once part of a subtropical ocean.
North America would have been tilted about 90 degrees on its side, and we would have been located at about 20 or so degrees south latitude in the southern hemisphere, right? And so over time, North America spun and worked its way up to its modern day location.
And new sediment layers were continuously being deposited on the bottom, sealing in another chapter in geological history. The resulting sediment layer cake we see in places like here in the Driftless is like a geological calendar, locking in many of the marine creatures that were present in these waters at different times.
Oh yeah, gastropod.
Got it.
I'm Jordan Chomey from Decorah, Iowa. And this is my father, John Chomey,
and
also from Decorah.
We met when he was born. Well, I grew up picking arrowheads. Which became fossil picking when we started canoeing. And so I talked to Jordan about fossil picking, and it didn't take much to get him hooked.
True story.
The flat spirals like these are called maclurites. Any of the ones with this spiral are gastropods.
Having started at a young age, I think it's just a part of who I am. I feel like that's my main passion is being out there in nature and exploring and being in caves and looking for fossils and arrowheads. And I think as it started at a young age, yep, it hooked me.
This is amazing. Like, look at this particular rock. I mean, I guess these are bivalves, little seashell type things. And the cool thing is, this is 400 million years ago, and you can still find things that look just like this today.
Yep.
The other cool thing is that we are nowhere near the ocean. And these are ocean animals. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Holy moly.
Aside from a chance to find fossils, there are other things that intrigue us about this sedimentary rock layer cake. When different layers of rock are stacked on top of each other like this, interesting things can start to happen underground, as we noticed on our initial flight over the area. Fossils are found in a limestone rock, a rock type that may slowly start to dissolve away as water passes through it over time.
as water filters through this, it'll actually dissolve part of the rock. And over time, those cracks start to get bigger and bigger because we're dissolving more and more of that rock. And so what happens is we create these caverns within the rock.
That is a sinkhole right there.
That's a sinkhole.
All those are sinkholes.
This is a sinkhole?
That's a sinkhole. Any time you see little patches of trees, that's pretty much
a
sinkhole.
Probably, yeah,
sinkhole. Like this right here, right next to the road, that's a
right
sinkhole.
Right next to the cemetery.
Oh, wow. This whole landscape is just dotted with these little patches of trees. And when you get up to the little patches of trees, you realize that they go straight down.
A sinkhole would be sort of a big room or a big cavern that would form. And as it dissolves, as that rock dissolves, and we start to get a thinner and thinner layer up above it, that layer, that top layer, can then collapse, right? And so then we have the surface layer collapse into the sub layer, creating one of these sinkholes.
I'm right over the top of this sinkhole. Look how deep it is. See how that's the top of the trees in that hole.
Who would have thought that there is a sinkhole capital? And we're in it right now. Fountain, Minnesota, sinkhole capital of the USA.
Why are the sinkholes here and not other places?
Well, they're much more prominent in this fountain area here because that limestone that slowly dissolves is very close to the surface and it's not protected by much soil. So it's very easy for the rainwater, surface water, which is weakly acidic, to come in contact with the limestone and start to dissolve it. There are also parts of the Driftless where you don't find many sinkholes because there's another layer of rock over the top of the limestone, and that sometimes caps the surface.
We sometimes have a tendency to forget that there could be a lot of things going on under our feet without our knowledge. This region is proof of that. Who knows how many of these sinkholes that are connected underground and how many more that are going to open up in the future.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, they're just like all over the place.
We probably wouldn't even have known that there were giant underground cavities like this if the dissolved limestone had not been so close to the surface as it is here in Fountain. But sinkholes exist in other parts of the Driftless as well. We have been told about a special one hidden away in the forest.
This entire thing is full of vicious plants. Nettle.
We're actually going to the top of the bluff.
This sinkhole is actually on private land, so we can't really show where we are, but I can tell you it's up at the top of this hill, and it's very steep.
Wow, look at this, huh?
This is so different to the other ones we've seen. You can still see the kind of almost cup-shaped ground, how everything's kind of sunk in. But in contrast to the other ones that we've seen, this is actually going into a cave down the bottom.
This time we're being guided by Buzz Bocker, who is a retired environmental studies instructor and knows this sinkhole cave inside out.
If you're having a panic attack, you need to tell somebody.
So it's tight?
Oh yeah, there's some really, really, really tight spots.
Like by really tight, you mean like you're on your hands and
you
knees?
You have to put your hands in front of you and wiggle through. If you were wearing a helmet, you'd have to take the helmet off because the helmet wouldn't fit.
As we descend into the cave, we immediately enter the big main chamber that lies just a couple of feet below the surface. This hollowed out cavern is ultimately what caused the ground to collapse and expose this sinkhole. Seeing the sinkhole from this side adds a whole new perspective and understanding to what we saw earlier. But already at the back of the main chamber, things starts to get tighter.
I'm just trying to get a feel for where my legs are and if I can get in.
The so-called birth canal marks the beginning of where the water drains out of the large sinkhole cavern, and a common place for claustrophobia to kick in. Tim is starting to have bad flashbacks from an earlier visit.
And I'm serious, nobody crack any jokes about the tightness of this thing. I'm serious.
Well, George is over there.
Twice as big as you are.
I'm going to fly that way, right? I'm chill. I want to stay chill, so.
This is as far as we can make it this time, but the tunnel system continues. We're told that other cavers have made it almost three times as far in the past. This impressive sinkhole cave has given us a glimpse into the underground activity of the Driftless.
No ice cream tonight.
But it's only the beginning, as sinkholes are not the only way into this hidden world. In the fall of 1967, cave explorers Steve Barnett and Dave Jano are about to make an incredible discovery and uncover one of the biggest and most impressive hidden secrets of the Driftless region. Barnett had scouted the location before. Freediving the 47-degree water, he found that the spring at the base of the bluff seemed to be the outflow of a potential cave system. The two had been investigating springs all over northeast Iowa with hopes of finding undiscovered caves. The volume of water at this spring showed potential of a good-sized tunnel inside. At this point, the two had no idea that the cave system they were about to enter would in the next couple of years take them miles underground under the Iowa farmlands. This is what the land looks like only a couple of miles from the spring.
It took a while for us to find this because this is right in the middle of kind of nowhere, in the middle of a field, just like a bunch of trees right here.
All right, so let me just fill you in on what we're doing. This little structure behind us is where the entrance to the cave is. It goes down almost 100 feet.
What?
Play above ground, you play below ground.
Holy!
Can you see the bottom?
Yeah, you can see the bottom.
To this date, no natural surface entrance to this cave has been found, and the spring resurgence has been gated off for safety reasons. The only way to get to the cave system today is here.
See you down below, guys.
So at some point, they drilled this hole down. Somehow they had figured out that down here was the best place to actually get to the cave system.
Whoa!
The sinkhole cave gave us an idea of what was going on, but this is just incredible. We're standing in an underground river running through a tunnel large enough to fit a train. And we're lucky, there hasn't been a whole lot of rain lately, so the water is waist deep at most.
Basically, we're trying to traverse back into this cave, but it's tricky because every step is different.
The biggest hazard is tripping, so just go really slow.
Well, try not to dunk the cameras, Jonas.
Woo!
We'll go back and forth on this one and try to get.
Oh, that's gonna be cool.
Can I hold it? 3, 2, 1.
The tunnel almost looks dug out.
Yeah, that looks nice.
But no human has had anything to do with making this, only water, slowly over time eroding away the limestone sedimentary rock and creating a network of tunnels and passageways. In several places, we can see how water is literally coming out of the rock and feeding more water to the underground river. And just a short walk upstream, we come across a whole rock covered in fossils. These are crinoids, ancient sea lilies, relatives of today's sea stars. These were common in the subtropical sea that covered this part of the planet around 300 to 500 million years ago.
Nice.
You're breathing hard. Like you're
I was.
Looking or something.
Yep, clear.
Good job.
That was fun.
And even if it feels like we've seen a lot on this visit, it's only a small part of the more than 17 miles of tunnels that have been explored so far.
Just want to remind everyone what we're actually standing on here. Check this out.
17 miles of tunnels under this.
Having seen this spring resurgence and knowing what it is like inside this cave, how vast, how beautiful the formations, whenever I see another spring, I have the same thoughts and visual emotions that come and just flood me with what is that cave system like. There are a lot of cave spring resurgences in the area, some of them with higher flow rates of water that are exiting out. And that only leads you to believe that the cave system is even larger than this cave system. And this one is already at 17.2 miles so far.
Hi, I'm John Muskowski, director of PBS Wisconsin. We're watching Decoding the Driftless, this wonderful film that explores this half a billion year history of this area, of this really, really unusual place. And we're discovering why people love the Driftless, why we're drawn to that area, to the great variety, and why it's such an important part of Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa. And a really important story is why people are working to preserve that. And so we're going to explore it, see the beauty of the area, and then we're going to learn a little bit about the people who are doing the work, really consciously thinking about how do you sustain this area. So the phone number for you to support PBS Wisconsin and work just like this is 1-800-236-3636. We encourage you to go to the phone, show your support for Wisconsin programming on PBS Wisconsin with your call and your pledge to 800-236-3636.
Thank you, John. I'm Eric Greiling. I'm director of Friends of PBS Wisconsin. And I'm also a proud graduate of Richland Center High School, home of the Hornets, in the heart of Wisconsin's Driftless area. So I'm really excited about this program, and I'm really excited to tell you some ways that we can say thank you to you for making your pledge, for making your contribution right now to this wonderful program and to all the programming on PBS Wisconsin. So at $10 a month, you get your choice of a DVD of tonight's program or the Blu-ray or this terrific book, The Driftless Reader. I know it makes a wonderful gift because my mom gave me a copy, and I think it's fantastic. So continue to explore the Driftless region through watching the DVDs again, through the book, or through this fantastic print we have here. It's a signed, numbered print from artist James Steno, and at $10 a month, any one of these can be your choice as a gift from us to say thank you for making your contribution. Or at $20 a month, you can be thanked with the DVD or Blu-ray and the book and the print. So all of these great ways for us to say thank you in addition to saying thank you. Thank you so much for making your call now, for going online right now, and give us a call at 1-800-236-3636.
Hi, I'm David Hofford. I'm a volunteer here with PBS Wisconsin, and I did not graduate from a Driftless Region high school. I have been spending an awful lot of time in the Driftless region this summer. I'm training for a big hiking adventure I'm hoping to go on later in the year, and basically every weekend I head out to some other part of the Driftless region, climb those bluffs they were talking about, and you know, it's pretty awe-inspiring to be out there in that region, and then to be able to come home and learn about the science behind it and the history of it and have that kind of complete mind, body, soul experience with this kind of with our backyard, that's an experience that you're not going to find anywhere else other than on PBS Wisconsin. We're here taking this break to ask you to support that mission, support that work by making a pledge of financial support, by becoming a sustaining member of Wisconsin, of PBS Wisconsin. The number to call is 1-800-236-3636.
Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your pledges. You're watching Decoding the Driftless. And I want to introduce you to George Howe, the producer of this program. George, we know that there's some educational elements of this program, some community screening. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your hopes for this film and what you want to accomplish with it?
Well, what we've seen it do is make a huge difference, reaching millions of people that live in the Driftless and informing them about all the fabulous stuff here that we have, some of it unique in the whole world, some of it unique in North America. And, you know, living here most of my life and working as an educator, scientist, and land conservationist, I knew, and others on our team knew, that a lot of people didn't know this stuff. And we know that knowledge affects people's inspiration, their actions, because if you don't know about something, you really can't care about it, and you're probably never gonna wanna help conserve it or protect it or share it with people you care about. So building awareness. We feel that's foundational to everything else good that happens when people connect with nature, have local pride, and have a sense of place about where they live.
Yeah, thank you. It's really wonderful work, and I think you accomplished that. I mean, we take into places that, you know, that you can't go to. Well, in some places, I think even if I could go to, I'm not sure that I'd hang off the edge of the bluff there. So folks will see that a little bit later. So we're going to talk to you a little bit more as folks are calling and showing their support for PBS Wisconsin. When we come back next time, I want to talk about some of the people in the show, because there's some really wonderful work that we see demonstrated here, some great voices, great research from all over Wisconsin, too. We'll talk about that when we come back.
When you call right now, your gift of support, your pledge of support, your sustaining gift, your membership renewal, your new membership allows us to bring films like this film from George to you. Whether it's unlocking wonders and local mysteries that are right here in Wisconsin. And for someone who comes from the Driftless, there were so many things in this film that I didn't know already, sites that you can live there and not have access to, that if you see them from the air, they're completely different. So help us to continue to bring these local marvels to you and unlock all of this. But beyond that, independent film, whether it's science, whether it's independent documentaries, all of these things, your pledge of support brings that right to your living room. 1-800-236-3636.
And again, when you make that call to 1-800-236-3636, there are some wonderful thank you gifts available to you. For a pledge of $10 a month, you can choose either to get the DVD or the Blu-ray or the book. So depending on how you like to learn about this content, both are available to you. Also, the print that Eric has over there on his desk. And if you can't decide, at that $20 a month level, you get it all. Either the DVD or the Blu-ray. You probably only have one player anyway, but then the book and the print as well. As well as the other benefits of just being a member of PBS Wisconsin, the Airwaves magazine, PBS Passport, with all that on-demand viewing available to you from the comfort of your computer. This is part of being a community, and we need you right now to be either renew being a part of the community or to join that community. The number to call is 1-800-236-3636.
So I'm here with George Howe, the producer, and talking a little bit about this project. And thanks for sharing that story about how it stimulates conversation. I think that's what we're about at public television. What struck me too is this isn't a show where you found one or two people and then kind of, you know, stretch that into an hour. I saw folks from UW-La Crosse, UW-Madison, UW-Green Bay, just really from throughout the region. And there are a lot of great voices, people doing a lot of great work.
Yes, we really combed the landscape hard to find all the best people and diversity, and because we wanted to reach as many people as possible. And it really worked out fabulously. Of course, we're lucky to be talking about a region that just naturally has such great resources as far as people go. And I really got to thank Untamed Science, who helped us do the film, and, you know, my friends and colleagues who formed our little nonprofit, Sustainable Driftless, who raised the money to make this film and made it happen. And it's been the best thing that ever happened to us, I think everybody would say, and surpassed all of our expectations.
Yeah, well, thank you for this great work. We're really excited to share it with Wisconsin tonight. We're going to continue. We'll go part two in this amazing scene off the bluffs that, just to mention the bluffs, isn't enough. It's just really amazing. Great work. We're looking forward to your phone calls. Thank you.
The interactions between the unique geology and water have undoubtedly given rise to many hidden mysteries in the Driftless region, and there are likely many more that are yet to be discovered. What is even more interesting is how this subterranean network of cracks and tunnels continues to shape the region also on the outside. As it takes several years for the water to filter through the sedimentary rock, the temperature of the springs that eventually exit the bluffs stay cool all year round, and has given rise to a rich and diverse abundance of wildlife. One example is the native brook trout, which is a species that depends on cold and clean water to survive, and this is an area where they thrive. The Driftless is today one of the best trout fishing destinations in the country, and it has the highest density of cold water streams in the world. The springs and rainwater grows into streams and eventually large rivers. And just like underground, as the water moves over the landscape, it slowly eats its way into the loose sedimentary rock layers. It is this process that over a few million years has created the Driftless and the bluffs as we see them today.
When you're looking at a mountain, it is usually an uplift event that forced the landscape upwards. Here, we had several erosion events that carved the river channel within the surrounding landscape. So we have what we call inverse topography.
This is the explanation to why all the bluffs are the exact same height.
The bluffs look totally different from here, but they're all about the same height.
The top of the bluffs is simply the baseline where everything was at some point, and anything below is what has been carved out and removed through erosion.
By that process of chemically dissolving materials and physically eroding, picking up materials and transporting that, you ultimately go from having this relatively flat sedimentary rock to having a landscape that has been carved up and has this dendritic pattern of streams that are found all across it.
This so-called stream-dissected landscape is what stands out from surrounding areas where glaciers wipe the slate clean. But in some rare places, it is not the water that comes out of the bluffs that creates a unique ecosystem. Instead, it's the air. George and Tim are taking us to a spot in the forest that quite honestly is a beast to find.
Now, on the way to hike into the woods.
I was going to go this way today, but this is a jungle, so let's head up the bluff.
We're looking for a strange and rare habitat called an algific talus slope.
Whew. Pretty dense vegetation, though. Ah!
Did you find it?
Hello?
He said he found it!
Up here! He found
it! Tim found it! Oh, finally found it. This is the algific talus slopes.
We want to be careful not to walk over here because this is a very fragile geology. There's all this fractured rock under here that the cold air moves through. The bluff is actually breathing here. There's air being taken in a vent, probably 200 feet uphill. But there are places in this bluff where there's ice from last winter.
Let's try and explain this. Algific means cold producing, and talus is a word for the broken rock fragments that make up the upper layer of the soil. Inside of these bluffs, it can get very cold. Water that flows through the limestone in the winter freezes and can form ice caves that may stay frozen all year round. Air gets cooled down by this frozen underground world and gets diverted out of the bluff through vents in the limestone. This in turn generates a pressure gradient that starts with air being sucked in through the vents on top of the bluff down to the ice caves where it gets cooled down and then pushed out through the talus slope vents.
Yeah, this is kind of what it feels like. If I was to sit down here, right here, it's like I'm getting hit with an air conditioner. It is such an incredibly distinct temperature difference just from standing up to sitting down.
So I have a thermometer I put in the slope here a little while ago, and let's check it. Oh my God, it's below freezing. This thermometer is at 25 degrees. Yes. Come and look, Jonas.
Take a look at this.
Verify. 32 degrees, and it's down at like 24. Yeah. Okay, and it's rising fast as I bring it out. Now it's going back up to freezing, but it was almost down to 20 when I had it down here in the vent.
20 Fahrenheit, -5 centigrade for us Europeans. It's impressive.
Algific talus slopes only exist here in the Driftless region and one other place in West Virginia. It is hard to think that any plants would thrive under these conditions, but there are some exceptions, like the beautiful northern monkshood. This rare flower has adapted to live in the cold and fragile soils of these algific taloslopes. In addition to the rare plants, there are also a whole collection of rare snails found only here, Pleistocene relics, so to speak. Both the Pleistocene snails and northern monkshood are listed as federally endangered. The casual observer, though, might not realize how rare they are, but we're basically seeing Ice Age holdovers.
As you come here, you can see the plants, the northern monkshood and other plants, actually quivering because this cold air is pouring out of the side of the hill through these vents, and so the leaves are just quivering away. It's really wild.
I think if I was to just walk through this forest not knowing anything about this, I probably wouldn't have, you know, paid too much attention to it, except for these beautiful purple flowers. I would not have realized how rare they are. I would not have realized how sensitive this whole area is. But just knowing a little bit about this makes it really special to get here.
So this algific talus slope is yet another example of how the unique geology here in the Driftless region creates these natural communities that are incredibly rare. If we didn't have the sedimentary rock layers in the sequence they are, and if we didn't have 2 million years of streams cutting down through this rock to create a valley, and then the glaciers missing all this to leave it here, we wouldn't have algific talus slopes, with the bluffs actually breathing air in the middle of summer, just a little over 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
As much as these habitats are unique because they're cold, the opposite also exists. We remembered a strange observation we made from the airplane. On several of the steep bluff slopes, there were exposed patches of what looked like clear-cut forest. But contrary to the hidden algific talus slopes, these areas seemed to bake in sunlight. So we took to the ground with local experts Scott Letty and Caitlin O'Connor. It turns out these cleared patches are actually not cleared at all. Instead, they're another natural yet somewhat odd habitat, the bluff prairies, and known by many locals as goat prairies. Similar to the algific talus slopes, they're also home to some very interesting wildlife.
There's some columbine blooming, but this is the wild type. This is the black-eyed Susan. Oh, wild asparagus. Oftentimes, when you're just driving through the Driftless and you look at the bluffland regions, goat prairies kind of look like bald spots in an otherwise forested habitat. But these bald spots are very ecologically unique. There's a couple of characteristics that define the goat prairies, and the most important one being the aspect or the direction that these prairies face. So you're only going to find goat prairies on southern and western slopes on the bluffs. The second characteristic is really shallow, rocky soils. In the summertime, the sun beats down and it makes it very hot and very dry. Similarly, in the wintertime, the sun is going to beat down and it melts the snow off of these steep slopes, and it makes this area exposed to the very harsh winter conditions that we have up in the Driftless region. So anything that thrives here is a really tough cookie. They're adapted to very harsh conditions.
Not only are the bluff prairies home to hundreds of species of plants, this hot and dry habitat is also perfect for some other rare species. Most people would not associate rattlesnakes with Minnesota, but even if they are hard to find, the steep bluffs are in fact home to a population of timber rattlesnakes.
Now, this is obviously a great sign that they are here, so let's see if we can actually find a live one. I'm gonna put this one back where I found it. All right, let's go.
But as they are very well camouflaged, finding one requires some work. And as the sun started to heat up the rocks, we got lucky.
Rob, do you wanna come here?
One in that bush. There was a second one that rattled at me, and it's right now out there.
Timber rattlesnakes are generally found much further south, but because of the unique habitat, this somewhat isolated population still remains up here. Timber rattlesnakes are actually quite docile and not aggressive at all. Unfortunately, their numbers have declined a lot, mostly due to habitat loss and the general public fearing these actually gentle snakes. In the early 1900s, this led to a bounty on timber rattlesnakes in Minnesota and Wisconsin, a bounty that has now fortunately been repealed. Now work is focused on restoring the prairies, such as through the removal of invasive species and restoring fires to this habitat. This provides ideal places for birds like the meadowlarks, bobolinks, and Henslow sparrow, in addition to the amazing flowers and rare reptiles. Another interesting reptile that lives up here is the six-lined prairie race runner. After getting heated up, they're extremely fast and very shy. The slightest movement and they're gone. Luckily, we managed to find a couple that had other things on their mind than worrying about us. A rare thing to witness for sure. As all reptiles, these snakes and lizards need heat from the surrounding environment to keep them active. To survive winters, they locate rock crevices or burrows below the frost line and go into a state of hibernation. To conserve heat even more, several snakes, even different species, often share winter dens, like this molting bull snake. As the weather warms up in spring and provides enough heat, the reptiles emerge from their long winter sleep. Because of the long winters up here and the abundance of natural dens beneath the ground, the habitat that is favored before all others by these reptiles are the heated south-facing hillsides of the bluff prairies.
But you know, it's all about habitat. Don't have it, and you've got nothing. It's all about places like this.
For us, it is another example of how these bluffs provide unique opportunities for life this far north that otherwise would not have been possible.
With the cycles of glaciers that came and went, we're actually seeing features that have withstood those ice ages. We're seeing examples of places where there's what we call refugia, where there's species that lived here during the colder climates and they've actually hung on here in little pockets because it is an old landscape and because it wasn't overrun by ice.
But to claim that we are just now figuring this out and how special this area is couldn't be more wrong. The truth is that these bluffs with the caves and the caverns, green valleys and cool freshwater streams have been sacred places for humans and wildlife alike for a very long time. Rock paintings have been found in caves deep underground, and rock shelters by the soft sediment bluffs display rock carvings thousands of years old.
If you look at the underside of a hawk or an eagle or other birds of prey, if you've ever seen the way that they fan out, perhaps that's what you have here. As for the rock art, it's spectacular rock art. We have both rock art that's been done with pigments as well as rock art that's incised into the rock itself. So we have different ways. We have these very elaborate compositions, some of which can be linked up to Ho-Chunk oral traditions, for example. And so the overall context or package is something that's absolutely unique anywhere.
The Ho-Chunk were one of the earlier inhabitants of the area and one of several Native American tribes that resided here. The bluffs of the Driftless made for great natural rock shelters, protecting the early inhabitants from the forces of nature. Their importance is displayed by the diversity and number of rock art found across the region. The sedimentary sandstone was easy to carve, yet strong enough to preserve the artwork, giving us a glimpse into the cultural history of the area. But the most impressive and mysterious remains of early humans may still be the several hundreds of so-called effigy mounds found all throughout the Driftless region, from Illinois to Minnesota.
We are standing on sacred ground. This is indisputable to me. And if you stand at the head of the bird mound on the first day of spring, the vernal equinox, and look to the east at sunrise, there's a small notch in the far ridge, and that's where the sun rises. And it looks like this bird is giving birth to the sun. It's an absolutely incredible sight. But if you can imagine 1,000 years ago, if you were on this site, there would have been many fewer trees, and there would have literally been hundreds of mounds visible. He would have probably seen a large central village site, perhaps some satellite village sites, smoke rising from campfires, and the human activities going on that would have been part of daily life. And it would have been quite an incredible sight to see.
We know the earliest people in this area came to this resource-rich part of the world. So this was a habitation site for the earliest Americans. Think about how you would move about the landscape without vehicles or horses or any other way to get around. You'd be using the corridors of the water. Being nomadic, they're looking for ways that they can get to places where there's rich game and rich land in the fall and protected areas in the winter. So a lot of these rugged blufflands and driftless area provided both of those things in close proximity.
The mound-building cultures lived around 1,000 years ago. The purpose and shape of the mounds varied. Some were built as burial mounds and others were made for different ceremonial and spiritual purposes. Using LIDAR technology, a technique of scanning the ground with laser, we now know that there are many more effigy mounds than anyone ever knew. In fact, there are more of them here than anywhere else in the world. And because of that, the Effigy Mounds National Monument was established here in 1949.
You have to recognize that building mounds is not an easy task. You have buffalo scapula hose and reed baskets. And it takes a lot of calories and energy to build a mound. So you have to have a charismatic enough leader that says, we're going to build a mound today. And then you have to have the buy-in from the public that says, or your people, hey, okay, we'll build a mound.
Were they taking the dirt from here and just putting it there, or were they bringing it from down in the river valley?
In some cases, they would actually dig subsurface into the shape they were seeking to identify. And they would layer special soils, in some cases brought from some distances, in some cases perhaps clean sandy soils from springs, you know, where you get that very sugar sand look. And in some cases they would scrape soil up from around the mounds, and in other cases they may indeed tote them with baskets from the nearby wetland or wherever. And then the engineering acumen to say 1,000 years after they've been built, they're still here on the landscape telling us a story that we want to know more about, but they're still here as part of their cultural landscape. And then of course, the knowledge of the skies, the sun, the stars, and the moon to have alignments where those alignments do occur. Nice. It's really incredible.
That's incredible. Thanks for showing this all to me.
You bet.
The effigy mounds are often made in shapes of symbolized animals. Why there's such a high concentration of them here is still not fully understood, but maybe not so surprising. The complex topography and vegetation contain a range of habitats that in turn support a rich diversity of life. But the big question is still how it is possible that this area got left untouched by the glaciers, allowing this complex topography to remain when everything around it got leveled.
Yeah, this is the place. Yeah, this is a nice spot.
This is Devil's Lake, one of only two lakes in the Driftless, and a body of water created because of the advancing glaciers. It also marks the eastern edge of the Driftless region.
And so right here, this is just a really quirky, fortuitous place that the ice came far enough that if you look off here, we can see the edge of the Driftless area there. We can see the edge of the Driftless area there. And then it extends behind us to the west, all the way down to the Mississippi River and beyond.
I thought about this so many times, that the glaciers missed this part of North America.
It is unique. And there's different explanations for why the ice stopped in different areas. Off to the west, the ice was flowing down out of the Canadian Rockies, and it flowed to different distances over different ice ages. And it's partly a function of how far the ice was able to flow with the supply of ice, and partly it was probably steered by the way the bedrock outcrops in Iowa and Minnesota. If you go to the north of us, the ice was trying to flow across the Lake Superior lowland, which is a tremendously deep hole in the ground, and so that was in itself just a natural impediment to ice coming down towards the Driftless area from the north. And then off to the east of us, there's the Green Bay lowland and the Lake Michigan lowland, which are troughs that are oriented north-south and kind of steered the ice straight to the south off to the east of us. And
In addition, the bedrock in central Wisconsin is bowed up into an arch that deflected the ice around the driftless area. And farther north, the hard, rough crystalline rock was a further impediment to stopping the ice from flowing any farther south. Cores show that there were fluctuations that indicate there were as much as a couple dozen ice ages over the last 2.5 million years. So yeah, when we talk about the ice age, we're thinking of the last one, but there were a couple dozen that preceded it, and all of them missed the area.
There are a couple of important results from this. We have already said that the Driftless exists because it wasn't covered by glacial ice. But it's not exactly right to say glaciers left the area untouched. Simply put, the Driftless region is not what it is only because it got spared by the glaciers, but also because there were glaciers nearby.
Hi, I'm John Buskowski, director of PBS Wisconsin. We're watching Decoding the Driftless, this wonderful film that explores a great part of Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa, this really wonderful place that is so interesting and so varied and so unusual and such a special place, sort of celebrating that a diversity of topography, of wildlife, of other things that we find in that region and the people doing the work to preserve that. We'd like to invite you now to give your contribution to PBS Wisconsin. We have a wonderful gift for $10 a month. We have the DVD or Blu-ray of this film, or we have a book offer as well. If you give right now, your dollars are doubled by our challenge fund. So please, it's a great time to give. It's a great program. If you're watching the show, I know you're probably thinking about someone that you would like to watch this with, share this with. Having the DVD or the book is a great resource to share and to learn more. And that's what we're about at PBS Wisconsin, about learning more. So your dollars will go to bringing you more great information. So take advantage of the challenge by calling us at 800-236-3636.
Thank you, John. I'm Eric Reiling, director of Friends of PBS Wisconsin. You know there's something special about it. It's one of the opening lines of the show. And there's something special about the Driftless, and there's something special about this break. It's a challenge break. So take advantage of that and give us a call right now. Go online right now. And let me tell you some of the ways we can say thank you when you do. At $10 a month, we've got the DVD or the Blu-ray that John was just talking about. Wonderful ways to rewatch this program. Ways to discover more about the Driftless area. I lived and worked in the Driftless for over 20 years, and there are things in this film that I had no idea about, and they were just magic to watch them unfold. And we have this really outstanding book here, The Driftless Reader. Fantastic read, supplements the film in so many different ways. You know, the film looks at the science and the archaeology, biology of the Driftless area, and this book goes even further. It delves into arts, culture, the people, the original inhabitants. Fantastic. $10 a month as a sustaining member, or this wonderful print that we could share with you, signed, numbered, from the artist James Steno. At $20 a month, you can choose between the DVD, the Blu-ray, and the book and the print all together. 1-800-236-3636.
Hi, I'm David Hofford, a volunteer here at PBS Wisconsin, and I want to pick up on two key things Eric was just saying. First of all, challenge break, right? If you call during this break right now, if you are going to give $10 a month, that's wonderful. It actually becomes $20 a month. If you're going to give $20 a month, that's actually $40 a month. Your money is doubled in this break. So if you've been kind of wondering, is this the time to call? Yes, this is the time to call. Second key thing he said, per month, $10 per month, $20 per month. I've said the word sustainers a few times. I haven't actually defined that term for you. When you become a sustaining member of PBS Wisconsin, you don't have to worry about renewing. You don't have to think about, oh, did I continue to support PBS Wisconsin? It just happens automatically. We take an amount every month from your bank account, from your credit card, until you ask us to stop. It's easier for you, and it makes sure that programs like Decoding the Driftless continue to come to you on PBS Wisconsin. You are why this is possible. So if you're enjoying this program tonight, please give us a call, 1-800-236-3636.
So I know a number of folks are calling for the DVD. That's available with a gift of $10 a month. We're here with producer George Howe. George, not only can they see what they're seeing tonight again and share it with people, but there are DVD extras. You want to tell folks about that?
Yes. Boy, if you love this film like I know you're going to,
You're gonna really love the DVDs and Blu-rays that you can get by pledging. There's an extended cut of the film that has like 5 more minutes of footage here and there. Also, bonus videos, just a gorgeous one on tundra swans, one of the most beautiful treatments of wildlife film and music I've ever seen. We had to put it on there. A really fun music video by a local artist called, the song is A Place to Be. And it really speaks to the mission of our film, of, you know, all this going towards creating a fabulous place for us to be ourselves and live a full life and for future generations. And the original trailer of the film, which is really exciting too. So you want to pledge and get those bonus videos and the extended cut. It's the only way you can get them.
Yeah, so thank you, George, for joining us. We'll talk more about the program. But I want to encourage people to call right now at 800-236-3636. Your dollars are doubled by the Challenge Fund right now, so give us a call.
Thank you, John. That DVD or Blu-ray with the extended cut available, the extended mix of this wonderful program, is one of the ways we can say thank you to you and with a sustaining pledge of just $10 a month. Another way is this beautiful print from James Stino showing the Driftless area and the counties of the Driftless area. And the third thank you gift that we have lined up for you, which you can choose between at $10 a month, or you can have all three at $20 a month, your sustaining gift, is this wonderful book from Kurt Meine and Keefe Keeley. And, you know, my mother gave me this book a couple years ago when it came out, and it made a great gift. I love reading about the state of Wisconsin. I love the Driftless area, and we would love to give this gift to you. It is filled with just about every author. If you've studied Wisconsin at all, they're in here. Ben Logan, Mark Twain talking about the Mississippi River, Robert Gard, Patty Lowe, Laura Ingalls Wilder, John Muir, the teachings of Henry David Thoreau, Aldo Leopold, Frank Lloyd Wright. It's all in here. It covers the geology, the original inhabitants, native voices. You should check this book out and continue your dive into the mysteries of the Driftless area. You can do that by calling 1-800-236-3636.
And remember that your benefits of membership in PBS Wisconsin are not limited to these particular thank you gifts. I mean, I personally am pretty excited about the idea of the extended cut of what we're seeing tonight. But on top of that, either of the levels Eric was talking about, $10 a month or $20 a month, would get you Airwaves Magazine. So you know what other amazing programs are coming up every week for you to tune into. Either level, $10 or $20 a month, is enough to get you access to PBS Wisconsin Passport. If you have a smart TV or a Roku, I have an Amazon Fire Stick, make sure you install that PBS app. There are lots of programs that are free to anyone on that app, of course, because PBS is a public service. There's even more available, but wait, there's more, right? You can unlock all of these wonderful programs. Again, at either of these levels would be more than sufficient for you to have access to those parts of PBS Wisconsin Passport. The really key part, you have to start by making the call. You have to take that leap and become a member of PBS Wisconsin. We need your support to continue bringing programs like this to you, and now is that moment. 1-800-236-3636.
Thank you. George, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the reach and impact of the program, Decoding the Driftless. You know, we invented public broadcasting in Wisconsin, and our work, for instance, with schools goes back to the 30s. So we've been here serving Wisconsin schools for over 100 years. Well, not schools so much, but close now to 100 years. But this film also has that intent to bring it to schools and reach larger audiences. You want to tell folks about that work?
Yes, absolutely. The reason it's fast-paced and you see the energy and exciting things, that's to attract the attention of kids and hold it, and young adults too. It's so important. We've got to reach them on their technology to inspire them to get outdoors and connect with nature. And we see the film is really doing that, and the thousands of emails and calls and letters we get from students of all ages, it's amazing. We've also developed 7 lesson plans that go along with the content in the film and reference educational standards for teachers to use. So any school or teacher that wants our lesson plans, we've been raising money so we can send the film and the lesson plans to them for free. So contact Sustainable Driftless, and if you want to help us get this film and lesson plans to schools, we know it works because of the feedback. This is one of the most highly awarded films in festivals, film festivals, international festivals nationwide in the last few years. The number of awards it's won are just crazy. Several in LA, New York. We went to London, showed the film where it won Best Cinematography and Best Documentary. This film has won humanitarian awards. In Las Vegas and from Doctors Without Borders, international film competition. And that speaks to how it's so important to connect people with nature and that people care about it, because that's what we need to drive, you know, to fight climate change. People have to care and they have to have hope. So and we give those stories of hope.
Thanks, George. Thanks for giving that background. And it is really a wonderful program. We're proud to offer it for folks contributing tonight to PBS Wisconsin.
This is a challenge break. Current members of PBS Wisconsin want to double your gift. They want you to pick up the phone, go online, and make your pledge right now. 1-800-236-3636 is the number to call. We have so many ways to say thank you to you. David was just mentioning a minute ago, Airwaves Magazine, the access to Passport, all of the content that's in Passport, whether that's national, whether that's our local programming, whether it's programs that we go out and get for you. Wisconsin Scenic Treasures Southern Vistas is in Passport right now, available for you to watch with your gift. We also have very special premiums for you tonight, special gifts, our way to say thank you for watching this program, for supporting Decoding the Driftless and this kind of programs at $10 a month. DVD or Blu-ray with extended cut of the film and extras that you can watch. You could also choose the book, The Driftless Reader. Fantastic read, supplements the film so well tonight. And a 12x12 print by artist James Stino, signed and numbered for you. At $10 a month, you could choose from one of those. At only $20 a month, which when our member challenge doubles that, is a $40 a month gift. You get all three of those. Just call right now, 1-800-236-3636.
I also want to take just a brief moment to say thank you to the members of our director's circle who have given at least $1,000 in this year to support PBS Wisconsin. And if you have the means to join them, I'll give you a really easy number at the monthly level, $100 a month would do it. Of course, not everyone has the means to do that, and that's what makes PBS Wisconsin work. We have people who are able to give at those incredibly generous levels, and we have people who give $5 a month, $10 a month, and it all matters. It all adds up to the service that you're seeing every day, to wonderful programs like Decoding the Driftless. The amount that's right for you is the amount that's right for PBS Wisconsin, and it's the amount that is necessary to keep programs like this on the air. You can make that pledge of support right now when you call 1-800-236-3636. Your money will be doubled during this break. Now is the time to call.
Hey, George, we want to talk a little bit more about the documentary and maybe some of the places that folks should be looking for. I do remember we did a program a few years ago for Wisconsin From the Air, and that Mississippi south of La Crosse to Prairie du Chien is just amazing. It's like being in a different world. And it was just stunning. And so I went there because I saw it on television. And I think there's so many places, walking out on the rim of Devil's Lake. I feel like everybody in Wisconsin has probably done that, but maybe not. So what are some of the places that you encourage folks to seek out when you think about the Driftless?
Well, there's so many. And, you know, Iowa has incredibly beautiful places too, and southeastern Minnesota. You know, Devil's Lake in the Dells is certainly very special. Anywhere along the Mississippi River, there's a huge National Wildlife Refuge. Perot State Park is fabulous. There are state natural areas like Rush Creek State Natural Area that are so rare and so beautiful. Some of the paddling waters in Wisconsin have to go to the Kickapoo River Valley. Mm-hmm. I plan to go when the water's low, yes. Not after these big rains, but the streams there, the trout streams, you know, we have some of the best trout streams in the whole world, and we have the highest density of trout streams per area in the whole world. And that's such a wonderful thing to celebrate and conserve.
So we're gonna go back to part three of the show. I do love the bird watching on the Mississippi, because not only is it a wonderful draw, but it's a reminder of how precious that waterway is for the environment and for those songbirds. And it's a really, really important resource for all of us. And it's great to see it featured here tonight. So we'll talk more, George, and folks can call and support PBS Wisconsin.
At the center of the whole Driftless, like a mighty artery through the region, connecting the veins of water that carves through the bluff landscape, is the mighty Mississippi River. Just like the rest of the land, this was once flat ground composed of layers of ancient marine sediment. The huge amount of meltwater coming from nearby glaciers is what started the formation of this impressive river valley. Rob and I have had a chance to see it from above several times, and every time it's just as amazing. Just the thought that water alone has carved all this out is somewhat mind-blowing. The Mississippi River was important already to early settlers using the waters to get around, and it's just as important to the people of the Driftless today, and the rest of the country too for that matter, as it is one of the largest river systems in the world, connecting the north of the US with the Gulf of Mexico. 250 miles of the upper Mississippi runs through the Driftless area. But there's also been times in history when the river was a lot deeper. Geologists have measured that the actual bottom of the river lies another 300 feet deeper than the bottom of the river today.
When the glaciers were melting and carrying sediment, that sediment ended up in this river valley. And it actually filled it up to a level much higher than it is right now with glacial outwash sediment.
The same glacial water that carved it out also refilled it with massive amounts of sediment that came with the water. The huge amount of glacial sediment also resulted in making the upper Mississippi unique in some other rather odd ways.
So we're at Lake Pepin right now. It's actually a really unique feature because it's the widest part of the Mississippi River and it's all natural. The lakes are very rare in this area. Well, here we have a natural riverine lake. It's been in existence since the glaciers were close by here a little over 10,000 years ago. And we have this natural system where the Chippewa River is damming the Mississippi River, creating Lake Pepin. And it's a pretty rare and interesting phenomenon.
We can see huge amounts of glacial sediments and sand that are still partially damming up the Mississippi today. And fun fact, if none of this had happened, there's a risk we wouldn't have water skiing today.
It says, Lake City, the birthplace of water skiing.
Well, we couldn't really pass that up, so we gotta get out on the river.
Can you imagine? Who would have guessed we would have the last ice age thank for all this? Now there's a fun fact to share at dinner tonight. Okay, so now let's get back to the main story.
Okay, everybody in. Well, hopefully we can see some cool things while we're out here. You can point out your favorite bits. I'm excited to just be out here and see some of the diversity habitats.
Yeah.
Look at these beautiful little beauties.
People already setting up for the weekend, starting to use the beaches.
The Mississippi is a wetland of international importance. We call Ramsar Wetland. So that means globally, it's been recognized as being that important.
Really?
So, yep.
So we're in a National Wildlife Refuge right now.
We are, yes.
Okay. So what does that mean for the river?
Yeah, what that means is protection for conservation. So refuges are managed for wildlife first. We also do have recreation, you know, people can come and fish and hunt, but predominantly most of what we're doing out here is managing it for wildlife.
That also involves informing the public about the sensitive animals in the reserve, like the many species of turtles that come and nest on the sandy beaches.
Come on up here, quick. Oh, it's hot. Ow, that's hot. You can see all of the eggs, though, right here. They've been predated, eaten by something. What do you think ate these things? Snakes or raccoons? The one thing you can actually see right at the moment, though, is you can see the dug out nest. And occasionally, you can see the slide marks of the turtles coming back down. Wow, unfortunate.
But the main attraction when it comes to viewing wildlife here must be the birds.
It's indigo bunting.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Look at that, we're so close.
I've never been that close to a falcon before.
This is, for example, the summit destination for over 100 species of migratory neotropical songbirds, like the chestnut-sided warbler, northern paula, and American goldfinches. Winters are spent further south, but in the summer they come up here to nest and breed. In addition, the Mississippi River is also a major flyway for migratory birds. That means the river functions as a guidance for the aerial highway used by millions of birds on their way between summer nesting grounds in northern Canada and the southern parts of the flyway where they spend winter. In fact, more than 320 bird species have been recorded using the Mississippi flyway each year. It is now mid-June, which means right in between migration times.
Now let's fast forward 6 months.
It is said that over 40% of the total population of waterfowl in the US pass through this migratory flyway. During peak migration, hundreds of thousands of tundra swans and other waterfowl can be seen feeding and resting in the pools of the reserve. And the abundance of food here makes it a given stopover.
As a photographer and videographer, this is something you kind of dream about. You're surrounded by this environment, the colors of the bluffs, the white swans, the contrast, the water. This is why I became a wildlife filmmaker and photographer.
The Driftless area is an extremely unique area, and bird watchers have taken note from all over the country and even the world. Bird watchers love to keep a life list where they keep track of how many different species they've seen, kind of checking off each species. And the Driftless area is a great place for bird watchers to come to see a variety of species in winter, spring, summer, and fall.
I realize it may look like we're painting a picture of a wildlife refugia freed from problems, but the reality is not that easy, and it's not without help. For example, programs like the Driftless Area Trout Unlimited Restoration Effort are working to restore cold water springs damaged by erosion.
Where we can do restoration, we can really restore them to something that is really rare in the world.
Bluff prairies have been disappearing due to lack of wildfires and the introduction of invasive species. Through prescribed burns and the removal of non-native vegetation, groups like the Prairie Enthusiasts have managed to restore and protect a lot of this rare habitat, allowing some of the unique biodiversity to remain. And even private landowners are signing up to protect their land from further development.
We feel strongly that we want to be good stewards of the land, and there's features on this land ranging from rock art that's up to 2,000 years old to virgin, you know, red oak forest, and we wouldn't ever want to see that developed, so we want to protect it.
Unique habitats are often also sensitive to change, whether it be changing climates, new developments, or things we do that affect the environment, even if our initial intentions were good. The story of the peregrine falcon is one example. These top-of-the-food-chain predators are the fastest animals on the planet. Nesting on the steep bluff sides, peregrine falcons have had a great symbolic importance to the Driftless for thousands of years, but recently almost disappeared completely.
The greatest potentiality of DDT lies in dispersal from plains.
The use of the pesticide DDT that was developed in the 1940s to help fight the spread of diseases like malaria and typhus almost caused them and other raptors like the bald eagle to go extinct from the American continent, and the Driftless was no exception. The organization Raptor Resource Project was founded in 1988 by Bob Anderson, who successfully managed to breed falcons and return them to the wild by releasing them on the cliffs. Artificial nest boxes were also put up along the upper Mississippi bluffs, and today the peregrine falcons are back in numbers where they are no longer considered critically endangered. But the continued work to protect and monitor them and their habitat is still crucial, which brings us back to where this story started, to the steep cliffs of the Driftless Bluffs.
All right, so we're on a big soybean field up on the top of this bluff, but over there is a big cliff. It overlooks the Mississippi River, and we think that over there may be the nest of a peregrine falcon. Now, whether or not this one actually has chicks in it is yet to be discovered. We have all of our climbing gear, and you'll find out.
I'm going down.
Going down. Here we go.
Climbing to topside, over. Four live babies.
That is good news.
And I couldn't believe it when she flew into that pothole. I was like, oh my God, I think I'm seeing things. But you know, she went in.
Perfect location.
That's music to my ears.
There are peregrine falcons right in that nest. How cool is that?
Today is an absolute success. On the three bluffs we visited, a total of seven healthy falcon eyesis were found and tagged.
The next male band is K over 37. That's right.
With the color marker the way it is and the big letters, you know, like K over 42, for example, that's more readily visible in a telescope.
The thing that got us extra excited was that the eyesis we found were in natural nest sites on the rock.
So this is what's really cool. There's actually a nest box mounted on the rock face, just maybe 40 yards down that way. But this is what they've chosen, this natural crevice right on the rock.
They've never used this hole before, and it's a beautiful eyrie. It's dry, it's out of the elements, it's predator-free, coons can't get here. It's one of the best eyries I've seen in a long time.
You know, this is a great story to let people know. I think it's really needed because we see that they're off the endangered species list. You know, people are monitoring them. They appear to be healthy. We've got them in urban areas. We've got them on natural cavities and things like that. And so this really was the ultimate goal, was to get back to falcons on the bluffs. And we are so... It's such a great feeling today to have our second sight that we're out here today, that we've actually found four young falcons. They're in a really nice little pothole. It's really what we were looking for.
Oh man, he's so calm.
He is very calm.
That was friggin' awesome.
This is a success story that really touched us. But maybe more importantly, it is a reminder that we shouldn't take what we have for granted. The falcons, as well as other birds of prey, were almost gone. And seeing falcons up close in their natural habitat is something I was dreaming of as a kid. Now Rob and I have brought our kids here to the Driftless. We want our growing families to see what it means to love a land as special as this. I want my kids to get to experience the things I dreamt of when I was growing up. In small places like this, ecosystems are very sensitive to change. The Driftless region may have survived many challenges in the past, but that is no promise it can do it every time. It is up to us to make sure these stories live on for future generations, for our kids. It shouldn't only be something they just learn about from a book or from watching a movie, but to set feet on the land and float the waters, see the birds migrate, travel back in time and walk in the footsteps of early explorers, or find secret worlds that no one knew existed, and to continue to pass on the dreams to their children. But making sure that can happen is up to us. We can make a difference now, and it starts with the knowledge of how special this place really is. I said in the beginning that I had a hard time putting my finger on why the Driftless region felt special, and I still can't give an easy answer. It is both very simple and, at the same time, very complex. On the one hand, its natural beauty should simply be enough of an answer, but leaving it at that doesn't seem enough. What we have seen and what we have experienced during our time in the Driftless can be summed up as a wild ride of fascinating discoveries. Now, Rob and I are acting as the guides for our families in this area we only recently found out existed. A relatively small area, perhaps, but nevertheless filled with hidden stories. The stories of the land that the glaciers spared.
Hi, I'm John Muskowski, director of PBS Wisconsin. We've just seen Les, just the credits, decoding the Driftless, this wonderful adventure into Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa, into this really, really wonderful place, the Driftless. We're encouraging you now, now that you've seen the program, you know what public television can do for a gift of $10 a month. We have this DVD, and the DVD has some excerpts on it. We're here with producer George Howe, who will tell us a little bit more about those extras in a minute, and also this really wonderful book called The Driftless Reader. As you heard before, it includes excerpts from Mark Twain about the Mississippi River. So many great writers who write about Wisconsin. Hamlin Garland. It just paged through it. It's a wonderful resource to understand the science, the places to visit. That book and the DVD and the print that we're going to talk about are available with a gift of $20 a month. So all those dollars support great programming like you're watching tonight. So give us a call at 800-236-3636.
Thanks, John. I'm Eric Greiling. I'm the director of Friends of PBS Wisconsin. And we want to say thank you to you, and we want to help you dig deeper into the Driftless, like the book John was talking about, like the DVD. If you want to watch this program again, if you want to watch the extras, if you want to watch the extended cut, if you want to share it with somebody else, we can help you, and you can help PBS Wisconsin by making your call, going online right now, and making your pledge of support at $10 a month. We'd be glad to share with you the DVD or Blu-ray of tonight's program with all of those extras, or the fantastic book, The Driftless Reader, so you can go even further than the program, or this wonderful print of The Driftless Region from artist James Steno, signed and numbered for you. At $20 a month, you don't have to choose. You get the threefer, the print, the book, and the Blu-ray and DVD. Your gift to us really helps us out, helps us bring these programs to you, and you can do that by calling 1-800-236-3636.
Hi, I'm David Hofford. I'm a volunteer here with PBS Wisconsin. You know, watching this program for the last hour and a half, I've just been so struck by these landscapes look like you'd be seeing them on, like, nature or one of those, you know, national PBS programs that you probably tune into, but they're not. They're from here in Wisconsin. You can go to the places that you've been seeing in this program, and you should. It's beautiful. Now, maybe you're not going to, you know, hang off the cliff like they were doing, but that's the point, right? You don't have to, because then you can watch a program like this, learn more than you ever possibly would have experienced being there yourself, and get the benefit of the expertise and the daring to bring you a program like this. What you can do to make programs like that possible are to make a pledge of financial support. The number is on your screen, 1-800-236-3636. When you call, talk to that volunteer about becoming a sustaining member. And let's go hear from the producer.
Hey, George. This is George Howe, producer of Decoding the Driftless. George, you mentioned a little bit about the extras on the DVD, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about that again.
Yeah, there's a segment on the geology, the mining. You know, mining, lead mining and zinc mining was a huge thing. The largest mines in Wisconsin here, and so we have a clip in there about how this unique geology in Wisconsin created this. And it, you know, of course, it all started, you know, almost a billion years ago. And we tell the story of that in the film. There's a little extra on the Mississippi River in the extended cut too. There's a longer the song at the end of the film, which is wonderful. And we have all those fun outtakes that are going to make you laugh. And maybe some people say it makes them cry, tears of joy too. 4.5 minute song instead of you're seeing probably 45 seconds of the song at the end. And the words so relevant to people that love this land and want it to be as good or better for their children and future generations. So you have to see that song, and you're going to see a pretty special musician. And you know, the Tundra Swan video, that's a bonus footage, just mesmerizing. If you're ever stressed out and you watch that video, your anxiety is going to melt away, I guarantee it. Just so beautiful.
Yeah, so George, let's talk a little bit about, and when we come back, we'll talk about that idea. I wanted to reference something in the book from Bill Cronin, and when we come back, we'll talk about that sort of beauty and also the inspiration in the show. Folks, to get that DVD, you can give $10 a month with your pledge to 800-236-3636.
We have so many great ways to help you keep learning and exploring the Driftless area, whether you're just getting interested for the first time, or you're adding to the things you want to learn and explore, or you're like me and you've spent so many years in the Driftless already and you're discovering once again there's something new around every bend of the trout stream or just over the next hill. We can say thank you with your gift at $10 a month of the DVD or Blu-ray, the book or the print. At $20 a month, you can bundle those together with the program, with the extras, with the extended cut, the book and the print, all of them together. And let me remind you that all of these recommended giving levels, you're also entitled to become a member of Passport and to receive Airwaves in the mail every month so that you can be reminded of all the great programs we have, national programs exploring science and the world, or local programs, some of which delve into the Driftless as well, with Around the Farm Table, Wisconsin Life, Around the Corner, Wisconsin Foodie, University Place. All of those have touched on something in the Driftless, and you can explore them and make sure you have them circled in Airwaves. 1-800-236-3636.
So Eric mentioned the PBS Passport program. That's if you are a member of PBS Wisconsin and either of the levels Eric was talking about, the $10 a month or the $20 a month will certainly do it. You get access to on-demand programming online through your PBS app and things that you would not have, that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. A rich library of the kind of programming you're seeing tonight, of the nature programming, of the science programming, of the news programming, the history programming. There is no other channel on your television or app on your smart TV that has nearly this level of variety and all at such a high level of quality. And it's because of people like you who make that pledge of financial support. The number is there on your screen. Now is the time to call. 1-800-236-3636.
Thank you, and we're here with George Howard. George, I want to preface this. I'm looking at the book that we're offering, The Driftless Reader. Lots of great stuff in there, but I just paged through quickly, and in this one section, just really in a few pages, a story of Zebulon Pike, which is an amazing story of his early sort of going through the area. John Muir, of course. And I want to use this a bit from Bill Cronin to ask you this question. Cronin has a nice essay here on the landscape and home, and he talks about being inspired by, as a kid, going into the caves. Pop's Cave in particular. You know, you talked about loving the beauty of it and relaxing, but this is also a film that's about being active and doing and getting involved and wanting to go places. So I think you could talk a little bit about some of those places that folks are drawn to and the purpose of this film.
Yes, absolutely. It's the beautiful places people see, the exciting adventure of it. And this film is all unscripted. I took these people to these places for the first time ever, and we shot. And it's a real story, and that's what makes it feel so real, because it is. And we actually have a short film coming out called The Places in Decoding the Driftless for people to watch. And I hope we can partner with Wisconsin Public Television on that too, because we have gotten thousands of requests to tell people, you know, where are those cliffs where those people were canoeing, or where can they go in a cave, or what's that place, the canyon, it was Wisconsin Dells, Witch's Gulch. So we want to let people know that, because being able to go to a place that really inspires you can change your life. In fact, it changed my life. I wouldn't have dedicated years of my life to make this film if I wouldn't have grown up in the Driftless and been forever changed and inspired and enchanted by this beautiful land.
Well, thanks, George, for this great work. We're watching the Decoding the Driftless. I will say I love to go to the edge of the bluff. I have yet, and I don't think I'll ever go over the bluff. But that scene of those falcons is just amazing. So we only have 10 seconds to go, so I'll use the 10 seconds to thank you and the hundreds of people, the community groups that supported this work. Is really a wonderful treasure for all of us in the Midwest and across America. So thanks, George, and thanks for joining us tonight.
It was so freaky. That cave.
We gotta help Leo out.